This is Tom King. I now write Batman, but I still love Dick. And this is still 11 o'clock comics.
Slamming.
Nice.
Yeah, that was really good.
Okay.
You're a maestro. Yeah. Yep. Back again, yo.
Yes, sir.
I'm really, really pushing for every day. 7 days a week, 11 o'clock comics.
Yeah.
It would be a wonderful thing.
You know, I've mentioned the Voices of Wrestling podcast I listen to.
Yeah.
And, they've been crushing it. And they've, much like us over the years, they've just said things like, oh, I'd love to not do what I do for a living, but we need to get to a certain level. Or like, you know, we'll do this show every day of the week if you guys give us enough patronage, you know? So they've been just growing like crazy because wrestling's so super hot now. So they're doing 3 episodes a week now. They were doing 1 because like they're making so much money off the Patreon.
Oh,
they're like,
as
promised. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's the dream.
It is.
Yeah.
Few attain it, but once you get there, man, it's a good view from the
Sadly,
top.
There's way more professional wrestling fans in the world these days than comic book readers.
I know. But you're here, people, and we love you for it, because this is 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 906. And off the turnbuckle, I am Vince B.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I know something.
And with a frog splash, I'm David A. Price.
You said splash.
I did.
Yeah, that's, I think, every episode for the last 10, you've said splash. Splash.
Nice.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a thing. It's your thing. It's what you do.
That's
my thing.
It's going to be a new t-shirt.
Yep.
And of course, I am Calvin Brodus, a.k.a. Snoop Lion, a.k.a. the Dog Father, a.k.a. Snoopzilla, a.k.a. DJ Snoopadelic. But y'all know me as Snoop D-O-double-G.
Wow, that was a trip.
A lot.
We got there, though. You're not all that. All those things you just said, Martha Stewart, you're Jason Wood, everybody, together on what we hope. No, we know this is going to be an extra fun episode because we have something really special planned. But before we get there, we want to tell you who made all this possible. And that's CheapGraphicNovels.com. CheapGraphicNovels.com. The place you go to get your omnibus editions, your trade paperbacks, your manga, your epic collections, your OGNs, all that stuff at a fraction of what everybody else is paying. Did you see the pre-order for Micronauts 2 is up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Needs it. And you're going to get it for 40% off. That's crazy. Go to Amazon and see what Amazon has for this book. It's not 40% off. Guaranteed. And the service is just amazing. So, if you want to save and save big, here's what you do. Place an order, receive the email confirmation, respond to the email confirmation saying 11 o'clock comics sent me and Max will give you free shipping on your next order. It's an unbelievable value on top of an already tasty cake of savings. So CheapGraphicNovels.com.
Can't believe you didn't mention the Gojira omnibus.
I was last time. I mentioned that last time.
Okay.
Yeah. You need that, too. Marvel's killing it with the omnibus editions.
It's so funny that they finally, they must have just, it must be a legal thing, right? Like, they finally secured the licensing for all these things? Because, I mean, these are the omniboo that we've all, for a decade, been saying, well, I wish they could make this into an omnibus.
Yep.
They're putting them all out in a row now.
There are 2 more that I want, and then my life will be
Shogun
complete.
Shogun Warriors.
Shogun Warriors and Crystar.
Oh, that's a deep cut. I've never read a
issue of Crystar. Crystar would just be one volume.
Yeah, simple. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they would do the...
Well, you might throw in the Weird World or whatever the hell that was.
The like, ancillary appearances or old Hotmu things or something like that. Yeah. But, yeah, Crystar was great. Those Michael Golden covers are amazing. Yeah. Brett Blevins, too? Shut up.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, we needs it.
Right on.
I'm drinking heavily.
Ooh.
But it's Swill. It's Yingling. I have, like, 3 cases of the stuff, so...
Dang.
I have to drink it.
Okay.
Is it better than the wine from last week?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, bodily fluids would be better than the wine. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
most bodily fluids.
Well, it's the small things in life, because I often drink, and you've heard me mention on the show a lot, the G-Zero, which is the,
yes,
you know, the sugar-free Gatorade, right?
Right.
Well, I get it at BJ's, you know. Get it at
home, right? I'd go there, too.
Yes. And BJ's always has the same palettes of flavors. It's always like a variety pack, but it's always the like the ice, you know, it's like an icy lemon. You got the fruit punch, you know, and then you got the lemon lime, right?
Yeah.
So I go to BJ's this week, and Vince, it's the small things in life, my friend, because they had new flavors for the first time.
Wow.
So I now have blue raspberry, grape, and orange G-Zero.
Wow.
How's the orange?
So I'm busting out the orange G-Zero tonight.
Was there ever a bad trip to BJ's? Like, that does
never.
Not...
There's never a bad
right?
BJ's.
Never. Never. Never.
Even when it's not quite what you're hoping for, it's still worth the trip.
Could
even
be 90. Teeth? Yeah. 90, no teeth, it still will be good.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How is the orange?
It's real good. It tastes just like Tang for all of us old
ones. Oh!
Yeah. It brings me back. I mean, I haven't had Tang in probably 40 years, but...
Now, Tang or Sunny D?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't think we drank either very often, so I'm going to have to go with the Tang, because I specifically remember the Tang taste. I don't remember. Sunny D, I feel like, tasted more like...
It was closer to OJ.
Yeah, like watered down OJ, right?
Yeah, Tang. Yeah, it's weird.
Of the poop,
I'm enjoying a nice gin and tonic.
Gin and tonica.
Yes.
Nice. It's not even Hanukkah.
It's not even Hanukkah.
Oh, the classics. Never die.
You know, the gin and tonic, close enough to gin and juice, close enough to your intro, so why not?
That's right.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Good job.
Thanks, man.
All right. As teased,
what are we here for?
We are here to talk comics, but specifically, this episode, we have a nice little fun exercise that we've planned for you. Everybody loves the top five lists.
They do.
Yeah. So this time around, we are going to do our top five favorite sidekicks.
That's a fact.
Yeah, it's fun. That's fun. Now, I should explain, I don't know how you guys did it, but I should explain maybe my process here. Mm-hmm. I went with the sidekicks that immediately popped into my head. I got them all down, and then I arranged them in terms of favoritude.
I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's sort of how I did it, too.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So we're all on the same page, roughly. Yes. Yeah. So top five favorite sidekicks, not best, like the 11 O'Clockers, not best, favorite sidekicks.
That's true.
And who do we have, Jason, in your number five position?
Well, let me preface this by saying I think it's fair to say a couple things going into this. One, and you guys can obviously agree or disagree, but one, in doing this exercise, it reinforced something I would have thought going into it, which is that while certainly there have been sidekicks in all types of fiction, all kinds of other types of things. When we think about comics, the world of DC is chock full of far more memorable sidekicks than Marvel.
Yep.
So now with that said...
Totally disagree.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, this is good. This is true. I'll make for a conversation. With that perspective in mind, as someone who spent half of their comic reading life mainly reading Marvel, I didn't find myself going into this as someone who would have necessarily been so into sidekicks. I often was like, I don't quite understand the allure of sidekicks. But in doing the exercise, I came out kind of more in the middle, where I was like, okay, no, I actually, there are a lot of sidekicks I do like, but, and this gets back to a little behind the scenes conversation we had earlier today, for me, as we go through our list, almost all of my choices are favorites in no small part because of what they become versus necessarily what they were at their outset portrayed as young sidekicks of heroes.
Right.
So with that in mind, my number five, Vince, is Calderon, the AKA Aqualad, AKA the new Aquaman.
Oh, okay.
the son of, he's actually the son of Black Manta. And while he is in the comics, my reason for putting him on the list is mainly because of the DC animated stuff, because of Young Justice. He's the leader of Young Justice. And I think it's one of the best cartoons of the 15 years we've been doing the show. And it's a cartoon that I have watched, with all my sons. They love it too. And he's definitely the most memorable character to me from that series. So, yeah, so I went with him. So he's a magic wielding pansexual, undersea lord. That's pretty cool.
So copacetic with every OGN you've read in the past, like, 5 years.
Ooh. Yeah, it's on brand. On brand.
That's a solid pick. I mean, I know, even though Garth, Aqualad, Tempest, whatever, even though he was around during some of my reading growing up, if given the choice, I definitely prefer the new Aqualad.
Nice.
over the old.
Nice. That is a good pick. And my list was very surprising because a lot of the characters on my list start out as a sidekick,
mm-hmm.
but then mature into something else. Or one of them was super surprising in that it's a title character that is essentially a sidekick throughout the majority of the run of the book. Okay. And I never thought about it, but we'll get there. Now, my number five was originally Rick Jones.
Okay.
But
definitely a runner-up for Vera, an honorable mention for me.
Yeah, but I swapped it out because I initially picked seven. Two didn't make the cut, and Rick Jones was originally in the number five position, and I swapped him out for a character that I appreciate more in their terseness. They don't say much ever, but whenever they appear, I love them. So my number five is Lockheed.
Damn, that was also a honorable mention for me.
I love Lockheed.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kitty's very interesting, but Kitty was never more interesting than when she was paired with Lockheed.
It's true. And Kitty, by the way, could be an answer for this.
Yeah. With Wolverine.
She did make my short list, yeah, for that.
I like that. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
There was just a what if. Dead X-Men, where Lockheed is the leader of this and it's really cool. If you haven't read Dead X-Men, maybe this will be a reason to read it, but Lockheed is like the commander, and it's really cool.
So, that is cool.
It is, yeah.
Or like Lockheed, am I right?
Don't give him props for low-hanging fruit.
Everybody gets one.
Yeah, that's it. You're done.
I had six immediately come to mind, and I had to remove number six because he wasn't necessarily introduced as a sidekick, even though he pretty much is, and then gets his own title, where he's the star of his own show. And these days he's kind of back to sort of being a sidekick. So I did not have this DC character on my top five. But who does come in at number five is a sometime friend to John Gaunt. He's a Thune and looks very much like a simian. My top five, number five sidekick is Judith Maccabee.
Wow. That's an
excellent one.
I'm stunned.
Ford.
Yeah, I like Judah a lot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because Horatio's an asshole.
Yes, he is.
And a lot of times he's really hard to take. But I think Judah makes, he humanizes Horatio a bit.
He's the sugar that makes the medicine go down.
That's a good one.
And for those of you who don't know, even though I mentioned Grimjack, yes, Judah Maccabee appeared in many issues of Nexus.
Plus, you get the whole Jewish angle, too. So it's
there you
like,
go.
That's oh, dead, M.O.T., love.
It's the dead on. Dead on. I think I would, if I were to pick something, I think Judaism would be my choice.
Me too. I agree. I mean, yeah. I've said that many times. If I was, for some reason, compelled to become spiritual, or at least religious, rather, I absolutely would go to Judaism.
Yeah, not only do you have the whole Tree of Life thing going on, but you ask a Catholic, even the tiniest thing about their religion, and more often than not, you're not going to get a correct answer, because Catholics really don't know.
That's true.
Where if you ask a Jewish person, like, what is this thing that, you know, they will, you are trapped for the next, like, 45
minutes.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get
which is good. Like, I like people who know what they who embrace their beliefs and are informed about, like, that's life, you know? Yeah. But,
what I appreciate about the religion I was born into is the different, I guess, levels, because we're Reform, but there's obviously Orthodox. So I mean, depending on how severe, how heavy, how limited your diet you want to be is determined by how deep you want to get into it.
Yeah, so. I love the whole, I don't know what it's called, but the whole going away for the weekend thing.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, like, you're committing. That's hardcore.
For sure.
You're just abandoning everything for the weekend. As opposed to the people from the church that I went to, they go on, you know, Saturday or Sunday, and then they go home and do despicable things. Like, they don't live it, you know? Jewish people live it.
Well, speaking of conceptual continuity, Vince.
Ooh, love it.
My number four is a member of the tribe. She's Jewish.
Kitty.
No, like I said, that would have been a good one, but she didn't make my list. No, it's from the distinguished competition. It is Miss Harlene Quinzel, aka Harley Quinn.
So there, she started off as a sidekick and then just exploded. Yeah,
and she was her original version, I think, was pretty annoying. She was one dimensional, right? Just sort of very much like the doting Betty Boop character to Joker. Homicidal, of course, because it's Joker, but to the credit of, and I really give Paul Dini credit for this.
Yep.
I think he's really the one that fleshed her out in the cartoons, but then certainly I think she's one of the most enjoyable characters for me consistently in DC, and I mean, certainly probably never to be matched by the fantastic Palmiotti Amanda Connor era, which just to me is some of the best humorous comics ever. I just think they're fantastic. So, so Harley Quinn is my number four.
I think Harley's a character that has eclipsed her origins to the point where she is a more fleshed out character than the character from which sprang. Like, Joker's one note to me.
Absolutely.
Right. They try to make him multidimensional and give him layers, but he's the fucking Joker. He's always the same to me. Harley, like, you never know what you're going to get. She could be the bad girl, or she could show the compassion and the heart. Yeah, I like Harley a lot more than the Joker. Yeah. Okay, my fourth pick is a duo, because they both could classify as sidekicks to each other. So I went with Albert and LCD for my fourth pick.
Yeah, I love it.
Which one is the primary and which one is the sidekick? It could be either way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just love the concept of a little robot girl designed to blow the fuck out of Wolverine. It's so much fun. And then just whenever they would pop up in the ongoing Wolverine, I would be like, this is my shit. I love these two together. But I couldn't pick which one was the primary. What would you say?
I'd say Elsie, but...
Yeah, but then Albert had some positive traits, and he was vocal at times, but not so much when she was leading the charge. So, it's I love these two characters. And if nothing else, my list... Mm-hmm. Shows you that I am definitely not in the DC camp with this thing.
You just made me think for some reason of Nanny and Orphan Maker. Remember them?
Hell yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
That was creepy.
Yes.
Thank you, Wheezy, for that.
Yep.
Yeah, some of the sidekicks that if I were to lean Marvel, like they were all like members of the Imperial Guard or things like that. Like, I didn't Because the one Marvel character that I do have on my list is number four, and that's Falcon, Sam Wilson. Even though, yes, he was introduced at the start, primarily Captain America's sidekick, I became a massive fan thanks to that four-issue miniseries. And
you love that miniseries.
I really fucking
he
do.
He does love that miniseries.
I think really he has do. Like 10 copies of each issue.
I hope I do.
That's
I
his next don't have that, many. Cover that.
Oh, yes. Paul Smith, baby. But then years later, we had the Priest-written Captain America and Falcon series that ended because Brubaker was coming on. But yeah, I think Sam has grown into a phenomenal character. And obviously, you don't even nowadays, you don't even think of him. They're probably readers, probably some moviegoers in the future, but there are definitely some readers that probably don't even consider, would even think of him as Falcon. He'd just be Captain America these days. But yeah, he is one of my, if I have to look at a Marvel sidekick, he's one that immediately comes to mind.
That was a bold move by Marvel back in the day to pair Captain America with an African-American sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize it now because it's like, yeah, well, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
But in the 70s, when the only other black character on the stands from Marvel was Black Goliath, like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, and again, we don't
and need Luke Cage, to, you know, Luke right. Cage too.
We don't need to go down that rabbit hole because people are going to be idiots. But like, I just always just lose my mind when you see these periodic outbursts about how Marvel's, you know, tries to be too woke now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just like, dude, like, just you're playing yourselves. I mean, this is a company created by, you know, Jewish men, and yes, they were all white, generally straight men. I'm not disputing that, but like, you know, but for the time, it was wildly progressive.
Mantis.
Like,
whoever hates
Stan Lee, I know we were on the opposite sides there, but Stan was as progressive AF when it came to.
Yeah, I don't disparage him for that. You're definitely right about the diversity in early Marvel.
For sure. So my number three is actually another Captain America sidekick, and that is Mr. Bucky Barnes.
Oh, I thought you were going to go D-Man.
No. And this is one where, admittedly, I mean, I knew Bucky as a sidekick more as a concept
right
than anything, because, you know, while I've certainly now over my life read bunches of the old Captain America comics from back in the day, you know, they were reprints or they weren't like meaningful to my nostalgia per se. But, you know, but then I have to say, I mean, but fast forward to when Brubaker brought, spoilers, everyone, Bucky back, you know, he was like one of the few characters that actually remained dead for decades, brought him back and then created this whole new era, you know, era where he's now the Winter Soldier and has been involved in plenty of, I think, really fun, entertaining stories. And of course it's a fixture in the movies. I definitely think he's for me, one of the go-tos for me, even if I didn't necessarily have much of a attachment to him as a sidekick.
Now that's, and this, but I don't want to cut you off, Vince, before when part of the self-imposed rules, I thought about, obviously you think about Bucky, and it's not like I read a ton of books from the 40s where he or the Invaders, really. I mean, yes, he played a part, but I went with those that I was definitely more familiar with, because yes, these are always our favorites, our top. But I think when if you were to look at some of the greatest in quote sidekicks, Bucky would obviously be on the list, even though I've read way more these days Winter Soldier comics than I have Bucky stories.
Right, right.
Yeah, but for the majority of our Marvel reading, Bucky was a ghost. He was that layer of guilt on yep. Captain America that was like, oh, the kid died. Okay, we get it. But Cap never let go. And that was, he was mentioned periodically, so we knew who he was, but never a player. And then Brubaker just flipped it. Like, yep. No, this could be a very cool character. Yeah. And again, like a lot of these things that you're talking about with Sam Wilson and Bucky Barnes, if not for the cinematic universe, I don't think they would be as developed. Maybe not Bucky, definitely Sam. Sam really came into his own with the cinematic universe stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I could be wrong. Your mileage, again, may vary, but Sam was always somewhere in the Marvel universe, but the cinematic stuff, like Sam's like, wow, this could be something. We could make Sam into a viable, potent character, and they did. And the comics, I think, reflected Sam. Not like Brubaker's Winter Soldier, that was a masterstroke.
Right. Yeah.
So
basically created that character.
That's just, you know, chef's kiss IP. Why shouldn't we use this? But yeah. All right. So what we got? Number three?
You're up on number three.
All right. After I let this one fly, you're going to be like, oh, damn, that's a good one. I hope. Because I wanted to have some indie representation in my list. This character is the slightly more volatile side of the equation of these two characters. I went with Hopi Glass for my number three.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Maggie's plucky, troublesome, volatile sidekick. And because, I mean, if you've read Love and Rockets, I almost hate to call Hopi a sidekick.
Right.
But Maggie is the focus. Mm-hmm. She always has been. And for more issues than not, Hopi has been the sidekick of sorts to Maggie. So I wanted to just get throw some love at Love and Rockets and the indies in my list. Because two and one are no-brainers for me.
All right.
So, yeah.
My third is someone who will always be people can groan if they want, but pretty much always be a sidekick first, even though he has grown way beyond that. He has leveled up immensely. And to these days he's probably, well, he's considered the version of the character after he picked up the torch and carried on the mantle. But my third is the first Kid Flash, Wally West.
You mean the one true Flash?
There we go. See, case
yes.
in point.
Yeah.
He's obvious. I mean, I can reread those first 30-odd, 40 issues of the New Teen Titans, and Wally. Wally can be a bit of a prick. He's got his baggage. He's rude and short with Raven. He's got his mixed emotions. He's dealing with other things, and it's just he was tired of being a superhero, so he was ready to move on. And then obviously, crisis happened. Then his uncle died, but he became a much better character. He grew up to become a much better version than what he was, and he's a phenomenal Flash, no doubt. But yeah, there's this, you know, and I think about a bunch of sidekicks, Kid Flash is right there.
I think Barry is in the same wheelhouse as Bucky, because for the majority of my DC reading, Barry was a dead dude.
Yeah, okay.
Right, that's fair, yeah.
Yeah. Wally's just a better character. It's a generational thing.
No, it's you're absolutely right.
If we bring up Hal versus Kyle, you're on the other side of the trade. So.
Sure, right. But
because Barry was dull. I mean, so is Hal.
Yeah, he was just super dull.
He's
just, yeah,
he's got the crew cut. It's just he's a boring dude.
I mean, I like Hal better.
Oh yeah, no, that's why I said Hal is.
Well, he's
Hal,
a cop.
He's a fucking Republican cop. He's absolutely nobody I should be enjoying.
He's got a upside down black and blue flag hanging on his door.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. He's got a cab with the prohibit sign through it. Yeah, he's just. Yeah, absolutely. But no, yeah, it's Wally is absolutely a better Flash, but there's just something about Kid Flash that, and I mean, there have been other versions of Kid Flash that I've enjoyed over the years, but yeah, it Wally for me is Kid Flash.
I think the reason why you're so attached to Hal is not so much the character, it's the artist that drew him. If Gil Kane never touched Hal Jordan, I don't think Hal would be in your list of favorites.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't just Gil, because you had Joe Stat, and you had, I mean...
Sure,
you had,
no,
you
know, I get it,
I mean,
but...
As far as my longevity and my an attraction to him, yeah, because, I mean, even, I mean, some of my favorite Spidey books are the ones drawn by Gil.
I was saying, Gil Kane casts a mighty long shadow. He was a tall dude, yeah. But, I mean,
well, yeah. Knows, but yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe I still bear a little ill will against Tom for what he did to Wally.
You do, a little.
Sure.
And you're not alone, I don't think.
You were out of your will.
I think that was Tom's only slip-up.
Sure. My number two...
But it was a big one.
Oh, boy. My number two is from the DC, and that is the one true Robin, Mr. Dick Grayson. And... you know, obviously, again, similarly to a theme here for me, I certainly, now of all of the ones on my list, I've certainly read more Dick Grayson as Robin comics, I think. But the reason that he's number two on my list is because of his breaking out from being Robin and becoming Nightwing. Nightwing has always been one of my favorite DC characters, and it's only been strengthened in recent years by the fantastic Tom Taylor run, mainly with Bruno Redondo, you know, that's, for me, it's been one of the more consistent DC superhero books of the last 5 years. And so, yeah, so I am going to give Dick Grayson some love. Love the Dick.
Nice. Love the Dick. Now, see, I'm on the opposite side of that, because I've read far more Dick Grayson as Nightwing stories than I have as Robin.
Sure. Oh, I have too. I just mean, of all the ones on my list, I've read more Robin stories than I have, say, like, again, well, like we talked about Bucky Robin. I didn't read too many Bucky Was a Memory, or I didn't read too many, you know.
Have you read Wolfman and Perez's Titans?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So my second, the only DC character on the list. This character, I don't want to say, starred in his own relatively long-running series in comparison to the other books that this god did at DC. But even though he was the title character, he's a perpetual sidekick. He was at the side of Prince Tufton. He was hanging around with Dr. Canis. He was with Ben Boxer and the boys. Commandy. It's my number two.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Commandy is a sidekick. He's... Huh. When you think about it, he always was attached to someone else in the book.
Interesting.
Yeah. And maybe Commandy's sidekick for a limited amount of time was Flower. But for the most part, Commandy's just a pal. He's just everybody's pal. Huh. Yeah. I think it's the only series that I could think of where the title character is a sidekick.
Interesting.
Thanks, Jack.
Because my number six was referring to was Connor Kent, Superboy, and he had his own title. I would never really consider him a sidekick, even though he's Superboy, because he premiered, he was introduced after the during the reign of Superman, so it's weird, but yeah, I mean, he pretty much is. But yeah, I would have never, if you had asked me, if you'd give me a list of 10 characters and told me to pick out the ones that were sidekicks and Commandy was on that list, I would have said this list is jacked, because I wouldn't have thought of Commandy as a sidekick.
Yeah, I don't think he's much more than a sidekick. But...
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. My number two is the character I consider the best Robin, and that is Tim Drake.
Oh.
It's crazy talk. What's happening?
Wow, it's fighting words.
It's I mean, he is the one who figured it out. He deduced that Batman and Bruce Wayne are the same person.
He realized that
Batman needs a tether, needs somebody to help keep him from going batshit and insane. So whereas the other versions of Robin that Bruce adopted, his previous wards, I mean, it was he was saving them from something. And in the case of the original Jason Todd, it was pretty much the same thing that he saved Dick from. But yeah, Tim is just he is a better detective than all the other Robins. Maybe he's probably not a better fighter than Damien, but I think he's a better detective than Damien. He's pretty much the one I would think who could take over, even though Grant had Dick do that. I think Tim Drake is the one who could take over for Batman. He is just he's basically a smaller version. He's a mini version of Batman to a degree. But yeah, as far as a Robin, if you were giving me all the Robins, male and female, and I had to rank them, Tim Drake is at the top of the list.
I'm gonna let you finish because I like Tim Drake, so I can't really front too hard. Because in fact,
you haven't heard my number one yet, so
that's fair.
Wow, no Son of the Demon on your list, huh?
But okay. Damn, I mean, in best Robin, I don't know, man. I mean, Dick Grayson was Batman, and he has been the leader of the Justice League. I don't remember Dick getting that ask, but that's cool.
Fisticuffs.
Nah, I think Tim Drake's great. My number one is already been mentioned. It is Dap's number four. It is Mr. Sam Wilson.
Nice.
A.K.A. the Falcon, A.K.A. Captain America. Yeah, I mean, he's far and away of everybody I've mentioned, the one I've read the most stories of. I have read the majority of his time as, you know, the titular sidekick to Cap in his own in the Cap book. And then, of course, all of his different incarnations over the years. And he's been very prominently featured over the last decade. And to your point, Vince, probably in no small part because of his role in the films. But he's fantastic. And
he is
someone. In fact, my most recent commission was of him. I'm a fan of the character in every way. So
I think we should do a top five significant others list.
Interesting. Okay.
That would be a lot of fun. Maybe next time. All right.
I'll tell you how long your article was, but that's cool.
My number one will surprise no one. This character started off as a sidekick, but they realized what they had with this beautiful creation, and he quickly blossomed into his own thing and has become one of the best characters ever to come out of Marvel. What's my number one?
Howard.
Howard the Duck.
Loved it.
Yep.
Now, Brenda wouldn't be his sidekick?
What was that?
You said Brenda wouldn't be his sidekick, ?
Brenda? You mean Beverly?
Thank you. Yes,
Beverly, yeah.
Yes, I did.
Beverly Switzer. Well, that's what got me thinking of the top five significant others, because Beverly would definitely be on my list.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I get that. Hmm. All right. Destiny would be on Jason's list. That's good. That's another one. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. Okay.
Yeah, he was definitely a sidekick in Journey the Fear. And then they're like, let's do something with this. And bada boom. Pro Rata and everything that followed, and it's just, there was a conversation going on at the shop Wednesday where Becky, who is Dave's gal Friday, was amazed at this young kid, less than 12 years old, was looking for first appearances of Dr. Bong and Winky Man. I'm like, what? She's like, it's amazing. This kid wants to read characters that, you know, basically are on no one's list. And they got into the conversation on writers that have touched Howard the Duck and who's good and who's the best. And I'm like, y'all are crazy. There's only one writer who should ever write Howard, because they were talking about Zdarsky's version and stuff. And I'm like, that's just shit. There's, if it's not Steve Gerber, it's not Howard the Duck. The end of sentence, right? And I didn't want to come off like the old man, but I guess I did. But Dave agreed with me. He's just like, if it's not Gerber, it's not Howard.
Yep.
And you only realize that until you've read the Steve Gerber Howard the Duck, where the writer and the creation are absolutely inseparable. And I think that's what Howard is, one of the very, very few characters that come out of comics that is specifically tuned to the the writer. Where, I mean, every, like, how many people have written Ben Grimm or Peter Parker or, you know, Superman? But you can't separate Gerber from Howard.
Yep.
And I think, like, Mike Barron and Nexus, somebody else yep. writes Nexus, it feels a little weird. It feels off, yep. right?
Yeah.
That's why I'm a little worried about this Steve Rude stuff that he's yep. got going on. Yeah. But we'll see. But
yeah. Steven's Rocketeer, right? It's like they try to bring it back with the other people. It's like, eh, yeah. you know.
Yeah, and Cerebus. Who else could write Cerebus oh, sure, but Dave yeah. Sim? Nobody. Nobody.
Well, Ostrander and Grimjack. And,
this yeah, is true. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, hell, even though we've had some, I'm going to assume, pretty solid Suicide Squad runs, I still think of Ostrander when I think of the team. Mm-hmm. It's just, I just.
But he had a really, that, really strong run. Yeah.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good team, too. But yeah. Oh man, my number one I kind of I wrestled with it. I wasn't sure if this really fit for me, but when I considered it and what I thought about where he came from, where he ended up, how it started, how it's going, he's one character I can think of where he. He's one of the sidekicks do grow up, but for me, he's pretty much the definition of the sidekick that truly, I think Sam Wilson could be a close would be comparable to this, but one sidekick who absolutely surpassed what he was, what he did as a sidekick, because at this point he's been his own man way longer than he's been a sidekick. My number one is Dick Grayson. I have him here listed as Nightwing, but of course he started as Robin.
My man, you have gone and totally redeemed yourself.
Told you. I had to wait.
I bet you're very relieved, Dap, that you've redeemed yourself with Jason.
He has completely redeemed himself. Love it.
Wait, that's everything? We should have did a top 10.
Oh. I wanted to, so a few years ago, I was given as a birthday present from my boss, actually, a book called The League of Regrettable Sidekicks by Talk John about Morris.
This. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun and thematic to tonight's episode. So you can, I think it's pretty cheap. It's probably like $25 online, but the hardcover book, but it's a lot of fun. They have a whole series of them. There's the League of Regrettable Superheroes, the League of Regrettable Villains, but the one that I think the best is the sidekick one because it's deep, deep cuts. It's like the deepest of deep cuts.
So damn. What were some of your also-rans?
Number six for me was Dupe.
Nice. Yeah. Dupe is like that. Dupe is a sidekick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to put Bug on my list somewhere, but I don't really think Bug is a sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to represent some of the odd characters that came out of my, like X-51 sure. is definitely a sidekick. And he's a favorite of not mm-hmm. only, you know, our show, but the Bullpen Bulletin's show. There Rick Jones, of course.
I'm actually legit shocked that neither of you had Jimmy Olsen on your list.
I think that's a given.
Yeah, well, if we were doing top 10, he would have been.
Yeah, I would say plenty of ours are probably ones people might have guessed of us too.
The Wintergreen, Slade's.
Oh yeah, there are three people out there going yes.
Yeah,
Wintergreen,
Slade's
yeah.
twin brother, who's also his gay lover.
You love his gum.
Oh man, yeah. Then of course you could just list off everybody from Brad Pack. It's. I obviously these are the ones that came to mind. We could obviously run off a bunch more. But like Jason said, I for some reason, and whether it's the legacy, whether it's the mentorship, The mini-me versions of characters, because that's what DC was all about in the 40s and 50s, there seems to be, in my mind, I just see DC as having more actual sidekicks that are considered sidekicks. And not,
no, you're right. Not I think you're right. Yeah.
Ears that, because I don't. It's yeah. I mean, he's a sidekick, but for all intents and purposes, I mean, Falcon should have been considered Cap's equal. There's nothing about it. And even though, yeah, it was Kitty Pryde, Wolverine and Kitty Pryde was the miniseries, and she was young, and I would have considered her a sidekick based on that miniseries. But again, she, and even at that time, if she was, then she obviously isn't now. She's another character that's obviously grown and matured and became something that she didn't originally start as. The New Mutants could be considered a team of sidekicks.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's a matter of phrasing. Like, it was Captain America, writ large, and the Falcon, right? You can make an argument it was Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, where Wolverine could actually be the sidekick in that book, or that mini. But you're right. DC has a much richer legacy of sidekick characters. They really do. I mean, you can interpret any way you want, like... I don't think there are many people that would consider Lockheed a sidekick, right? But they are, right? Yeah. And it's a lot of fun to root out this stuff, and it just keeps the mental wheels turning, like, because you know, age creeps up on you, right? And you want to remember the stuff that brought you joy, and I think these lists are one way of actually doing that. We can't forget about these characters.
True.
Yep.
Yeah, because even Ileana, when she's magic and goes to the big purple dude, it could have been her sidekick.
Sim.
Thank you. Yes.
How could you forget that? It's a takeoff on Cerebus.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that series. If nothing else, exercises like this surprisingly remind me how much the X characters mean to me. And it's weird because I don't wear it like a badge of honor, right? I rarely talk about the X books, but looking back, those books really meant a lot to me. And it didn't register at the time, but now I have a lot of fond memories of reading, you know, the X books, and it's very, mm-hmm. it's very strange because, you know, you want to be, love comics, but the indie ones are the ones that light my world on fire. But no, LCD and Albert, that shit resonates with me. It's so weird. We pretend to be things, and then underneath the surface, it's like, yeah, fucking Dupe, he's great.
That's right, man. Yeah. Like you said, it's about what brings you joy, right? Like,
it's true. Yes. It's true. Yep. 100%.
Honor.
Yeah, you know what else is going to bring you joy? Saving money, yo. And you can do that at cheapgraphicnovels.com. Save tons of money. Just go there, check out the prices, compare at other places, and I bet you that you're going to find it cheaper. Whatever you're looking for at cheapgraphicnovels.com. It's right in the name. And do us a favor and check out our Patreon page. patreon.com/11oclockcomics. We have a lot of fun going on. Most of it is centered around the Slack now. And you can gain access to the Slack on a certain tier. Audio, video, downloads, polls, camaraderie. What more do you want? It's a safe haven without all the internet bullshit. Very all rare. Very rare these days. So patreon.com/11oclockcomics. I just want to clarify something in my In Your Travels. I did. I maybe made this book sound like it wasn't worth reading. An offhanded remark. And I just want to tweak that a little bit because I read the entire issue. And I think it was a worthwhile experience, but I'm of two minds on this. Number one, the hopping in the Wayback Machine is sometimes a very dangerous endeavor because more often than not, we can never recapture the feelings and the just the whole mystique of things that we've loved in the past. And the book in question has a massive pedigree to me. It was Marvel's longest running black and white title. I don't it surpassed Eerie and Creepy and Vamprella. Like, I'm talking about Savage Sword of Conan.
Yeah.
Which ran for a long time, 200 and I think 50, whatever. It was around for many, many, many years. And so when Titan said that they were going to publish a Savage Sword of Conan black and white magazine, I'm like, ooh. I was scared. I was very scared. But they did a couple things right. There's an intro by Roy Thomas. If you're going to talk Savage Sword, you got to, you know, at least include Roy Thomas somewhere. But I dismissed it offhand as being inferior to the original. And it is inferior to the original. But it is not a fruitless endeavor. Because I thought that this main story that is written by, I think, Arcudi. John Arcudi wrote it. So it's a good story. It has all of the things one would expect from a Conan tale. But the art is by Max von Fafner. And it's not bad. But it's a little too digital. It's a little too dark. It wasn't unpleasant to my eyes, but it doesn't come close to the highs that we saw in the original magazine. So I'm just going to put all my feelings about the original Savage Sword of Conan and Big John Buscema and Alfredo Alcala and Barry Windsor Smith and all those wonderful dudes on the back burner and just like assess this issue on its own merits. And it works. It really does. The Arcudi story is long. It is a long-ass story. Conan puts his mercenary hat on and becomes a general in this endeavor to pierce a city said to have vast reserves of gold below the city. But the person spearheading the campaign has ulterior motives. Of which Conan is not privy to and gets pissed off. But, I mean, there are dinosaurs in it. You see an elephant get fucking chomped. There are beheadings. There is a sexy woman engineer that Conan snuggles up to. I mean, it has everything that a good Conan story should have. And it was fun. So, again, a worthwhile experience. Savage Sword of Conan, number one from Titan. It's like 80 some pages and it's only $6.99. So who am I to say that you shouldn't be reading this? Nah, it's got a Joe Jusco cover. What?
Yep.
Yeah, I just thought it was fun. A lot of fun. I have never been a fan of Robert E. Howard's Solomon Kane. Number one, he's a Puritan. He's a man of God and he's boring as fuck.
Yeah,
but at the hands of Patrick Zercher, it at least looks good. So get yourselves to a shop, pick up this Savage Sword of Conan. It's the first of six. I really think you'll enjoy it.
I got it right here. I'm going to read it this weekend.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yes, I was surprised at what was in the box. It's in the box. The second question on the bus and
another nice
2000 AD. So there were a few things and I found the Savage Sword at the bottom of the box. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Dang. So,
and, yeah. And I would be a hypocrite if I disparaged the art in this story, because to my eye it looks a lot like Brian Holgen's work from Last Barbarians, and I love his work. So for me to say, oh, it's too digital, it's too dark. Well, so's Brian Holgen's work. So it's all about perspective. And I was trying to impart something on this book that it could never be. You're never, ever going to recapture the grandeur of Savage Sword of Conan. So I took the book on its own merits, and in that respect, it is worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I didn't want to shit on the book and, you know, move on, because that would be unfair. I think, yeah.
I get it. In your travels, I'm not going to go deep on this because I'm still trying to just process it to some degree. But it is the latest series from Giant Generator. This is from Rick Remender and Bangle. It is Napalm Lullaby. It starts off in Norfolk, Nebraska, at somewhat of a peaceful protest. This couple is on their way home. They seem to be a little on the religious side, and all of a sudden, a bright flashing light forces them to veer off the side of the road and crash into a pole. They don't seem to be too injured. They notice these giant robot looking things chasing after the vessel that caused them to crash, and there's a baby inside. It's very reminiscent of Superman's origin.
Yeah, it's Superman pastiche, right? Yeah.
This couple picks the child up and drive away because they consider that their prayers have been answered. But their god is named Glowcore. This sounds like something out of Rick and Morty, and they drive off, and then we cut to 50 years later, so we're in the future, and that's where things get a little weird. I'm not going to decipher or do a play-by-play, even though the sex scene is pretty neat. But I'm going to give it another couple of issues to see how this unravels. I'm also going to reread this first issue again, probably after the weekend, just to see if I'm missing something, or if more straightforward than it appears to be for me. But I like Bangle's art a lot. I did enjoy the Death of Glory series that the two of them did. I'm interested in the concept as well, since we are it leans a bit science fictiony. So I want to see where they're going with it. You know, it's not Scumbag, it's not Seven to Eternity, it's not The Sacrificer. So if you're looking for yet another something different from Rick Remender, you can give it a shot. I read it this afternoon, and I'm really just he's piqued my interest, so I kind of want to see where it's going. I don't know if I'll be in it for the long haul, but at least to start, there's not like a ton here, but there's enough here where I kind of at least want to check out the next issue to see where it's going and to see where the opening kind of plays into it. So I've got some notions, but I rarely get things right these days, so I want to see
where things play out.
But yeah. No, it's just me. But so in your travels, check out a new book with a pretty catchy title, Napalm Lullaby.
Now, when did this come out? Am I totally...
We got the preview weeks ago, because the preview didn't have the cover. It was just basically the interior pages. But I think I saw this... was it this week?
Yep.
Okay.
Wow, how did I miss this? This looks great.
Yeah, I like Bengals art a lot, man.
Yeah, that sex scene is woof.
Yes.
Yowza. You got wings, I'm in.
Uh-huh. Ladies and gentlemen, that In Your Travels by Dab is what we would classically call damning with faint praise.
No, because I definitely don't want to. I'm And it's a me thing, because if, like I said, if I'm not catching something, then that's, I mean, if other people read this and they're like, holy shit, like, I don't understand, I just didn't blow your mind, then that's totally,
well, me.
If it's not blowing anybody's mind, then maybe I'm, you know, with the majority, I don't know.
Now, well, I'm gonna read this for next week. This looks really good.
Well, you know, the last page, obviously, Rick explains sort of where he was going with it, and yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. I read what he said the book was about. But then I'm like,
yeah, I know. Then I read the book.
I'm like, I mean, all right, that's what I, so I'm with you. I thought the first piece was pretty confusing.
Were these end pages meant for another book he's working on?
Yeah, so we'll see. Okay, so. At least I know what I'm going to theoretically be getting. That's cool.
Right.
Leave him alone.
What?
Leave him alone. He's on a streak. Rick's on a hot streak.
So, oh, yeah, yes, absolutely.
So in your travels, I'm also going to keep the specifics short here, because I believe not that my booze have read it yet, but they certainly will be. And that is the final drawn issue of Transformers by DWJ, Transformers number 6.
Oh, yeah, I started it. Okay.
There is, you know, again, it's DWJ, and I'll just, again, I'm not going to get into the specifics other than to say, if you read 5, this isn't a surprise. It's Devastator versus the Autobots.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
What the hell's the point?
You do love Devastator.
Oh, my God, dude. D-Dub drawing Devastator is just the thing.
Yeah.
It's life.
Yep. Somebody needs a beach house.
That. Oh.
Yeah. Dead. Maybe single issues should come with a ribbon bookmark for that. Because it's like I started it.
Because and then at 9 o'clock came. What do you want me to do?
Oh, nice. Priorities, right?
I can't come to the microphone because I'm still reading Transformers. Should come with a bookmark. You know what you can do.
All right, everybody. Hey, thank you for being here with us one more time around. We hope you come back next time, because we'll have more of this. I don't have anything queued up. So get yourself to a comic shop. Read some comics, talk about them online, come back and talk to us about them. And in the meantime, say goodnight, short and sweet. Boop-bee-da-boop-bee-bee-boop-bee-doo. Dap. David.
Night.
This WordPress is fucking me up.
Dap, David.
It's very, very unforgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. We love you, people. Tell them you love them so much.
All the things.
Wow, that
you know
was
who you are.
Con robusto.
Ah, con mucho gusto.
That's it for that one.